All right, guys. Hello, and welcome to Recency Bias, the podcast on the Fight Night Picks Podcast Network. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined, as always, by Hot Take Kate from Sophisticated MMA. Kate, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Awesome. How are you? All right. I'm good. All right, let's begin with Fight Island. I mean, it was a marketing creation, and as such, with much more sizzle than steak. I talked to Cameron on the recap show. We talked about fan expectations. I don't know what the hell they wanted, if it was like two fighters in a cage with a beach volleyball game behind them or palm trees or umbrella. Give me your impressions.
They wanted it on the beach.
They did, and which makes no sense logistically, but that's what people want.
No.
Their expectations are going to deem their ultimately their thoughts on things.
Yes.
What was your impression of Fight Island? Did it ultimately make a difference? Did it not matter? What?
I mean, I was coming into it not, it's Fight Island. The only thing that I was really taking from it was that they could put on international fights and we can see some of the fighters that we've been missing over the last few months. I did not really get super hyped about the island factor in so much that it's like, you know, the marketing ploy that Dana was trying to use. I was just excited that a lot of the fights that we've been waiting to see, we could now see. I was super excited for this card. I still greatly enjoyed the card. Unfortunately, due to internet issues, missed almost all of the prelims. So that stunk. But yeah, I still loved it.
Well, you're in luck. There was only really one fight on the prelims that had any relevance. And we talked pretty much about, you know, the joke I have kind of unofficially with Craig is that, you know, the recap shows for hardcores and recency biases for casuals. And that doesn't mean that you can't be a hardcore and listen, but it's like, we are interested in things on this podcast that are more important to the grand scheme of things in the larger world, as far as UFC goes.
You don't want me talking to the hardcore fans. They will poke holes in things that I say.
Well, and ultimately, I mean, you know, Davy Grant knocking somebody out in the first fight of the night,
that was amazing. I did see that.
But what I mean is that it doesn't have a lot of relevance moving forward with, you know, the state of the UFC. So, all right, let's talk about the main event, because it was a relevant main event, and, you know, it had a star and a high-level fighter. And Kamaru Usman's never going to be Jorge Masvidal, and Jorge Masvidal's never going to be Kamaru Usman. And the larger thing that I want to put out here is that I appreciate who Kamaru Usman is on a lot of fronts. I appreciate this notion that he thinks he wants to be a marriage counselor if he left fighting. I appreciate his heritage and who he is and how he puts that out there. I appreciate all that about him. But it does seem a little forced in terms of him trying to come across as a star. And when Israel Adesanya walks out and dances, it's different than when Kamaru Usman does it. It seems a little more like disingenuous. So I guess my question to you is, and I don't mean that in his intention, I mean just in the pulling off of it. You could talk about the fight, certainly. I mean, because we're not that casual that we're not going to talk about the fights. But from there, I do want to talk about Kamaru Usman's star potential and all that. So what'd you think about the fight?
Okay. So I'm actually going to answer your question, because you brought up a lot of points that I've actually been bringing up with people a lot over the last couple days, really. It feels like forever ago that this fight was announced. It was only really a week ago that we got this fight. And I had this argument with somebody that follows me, where he was very upset at the fact that everybody was talking about the fact that this pay-per-view could break records, and that everybody was saying that it was due to Jorge Masvidal. And I'm like, well, it is. And he's like, no, Jorge Masvidal by himself couldn't sell a million pay-per-views. And I'm like, well, no, of course not, because, you know, who does that? But prior to the fight announcement of Jorge Masvidal being on the card, the pay-per-view was trending well, but it wasn't going to be anything like crazy. And then after Jorge Masvidal, it went a little bit nuts. So to Usman, I feel like somewhere along the lines, someone told him he needed to have this like tough guy shtick. And it may have started when he was on The Ultimate Fighter. I didn't watch The Ultimate Fighter was not something that I followed very closely, but I did see a lot of his highlights and his clips. And it seemed like that's kind of where he was starting to build up this whole do something persona. And if you watch him outside of that, outside of marketing in the UFC, outside of those press moments, he doesn't come across that way. So I do think that you are correct that a lot of fans have seen through that and feel like it's very disingenuous in this attitude that he's trying to put forth. That being said, I mean, I think it's really unfortunate that he puts on a super dominant performance and then everyone is calling that fight boring and calling him snoozeman and making jokes about foot stomps. And I think that sucks for him, but I think he should steer into it. I mean, what's the number one rule of trolls online is you don't argue with them. You don't argue with stupid, you will always lose. And I think Usman has spent a lot of time trying to argue with people that call him boring or say his fights aren't very exciting or say his character is inauthentic. Start steering into it, man. Start owning it. So what? So what if you're seen as boring? You've got the belt and you've defended that belt definitively. Like, who cares what these idiots online are saying? So I would really like to see him just come into his own in that regard, because that is what a lot of people really loved about Jorge Masvidal, is he just seems like that is who he is. Even if it's not, even if it's totally fake, we wouldn't know it. No one calls him on it. We think that's who he is. And that's what people relate to.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different approaches to building a career, and Will Smith is very, let's not get into all Will Smith's lately, but one of the things that he said very early in his career was he sat down and figured out what all the movies were that did the best and just went ahead and made those movies. So he's like, I got to get my science fiction movie out. I got to get my cop movie. And he just did all those things. And I think that it seems to me a little bit like Kamar Usman is checking boxes, and it comes off very inauthentic. And that's the problem. I think that if I were Kamaru Usman or someone advising him, I would say, listen, George St. Pierre is looked at as one of the greatest fighters of all time. He is held in a very elite status. Exactly. And everyone said he was boring when he fought. So I would immediately start comparing myself to George St. Pierre. I would call out George St. Pierre and I would say, listen, you're still in your prime. Yeah. I would say, you're still in your prime. I think I fight a lot like you. I think I fight better than you. I think I fight the way you fight and I'm better at it. So let's figure this out. And I would turn it into that you are comparing. Now, there's a whole nother card that he could play, which we won't get into. But, you know, whereas he could say, maybe we will get into it, whereas he could say, if I fight just like George St. Pierre, why do you love him and hate me? There's something more here. There's a danger in saying that. And I'm not saying if I were advising him to do that. I'm saying that's something that you could slip into the discussion if you're trying to deflect some of this. And my point is that there are people who have been a lot more awkward and cringy, but at least they steered into it. Say what you want to say about Henry Cejudo.
Yeah.
At least he gave you the impression that he was doing it on purpose and not trying and failing.
Yes.
Usman looks like he's trying and failing. And I think that, you know, he is one thing I did like that he did in the post fight, which I think all fighters should do, is he gave a lot of credit to Jorge Masvidal. Because, you know, the thing you're supposed to do when you're a fighter is say the other guy sucks before the fight, and he was great after the fight because it makes you look better.
Masvidal did.
I think that he, you know, again, we could sit here and argue about, not argue, but we could discuss whether or not the 6-day fight notice made a difference for either fighter. I think Usman did a lot great there, and I think that he needs to get to the business. I think he needs a press campaign of guys like Trevor Whitman and people that are in his world getting out. Like, if I was Usman, the first thing I say is, Trevor Whitman, can you go on Errol Hawani's show and talk about how great I was? Because Trevor Whitman is someone who's highly respected. So I think that's part of what needs to be done.
Thanks for having me as a part of the show at Craig Allen FNP. And listen, I'm really looking forward to this. We've got a great partnership that we've struck with Ringside Beer, some awesome merch over on their site. They've got some really cool tap handles. I got the MMA glove tap handle. I got the boxing glove tap handle for their lagers. And listen, I couldn't believe that this was the introductory offer that they have to just our viewers with Fight Night Picks. But if you use the promo code FNP at checkout, ringsidebeerstore.com, you get 25% off your order. They've got some awesome merch over there. They want you to get in the ring with Ringside Beer. We're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff with those guys. So make sure you check them out, ringsidebeerstore.com. And as always, like we like to say with Fight Night Picks, let's get into it.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's spin this thing forward because I want to talk to you about a problem that may be sitting out there for the UFC, which is in their three title fights, everyone who is less marketable won. Now, does that matter in the grand scheme of things to fans? Maybe not. Should it matter to the UFC or does it matter to the UFC? Yeah, I think so. Do you see anybody in those three title fights that is sort of a sleeping giant in terms of marketability or fan care? Or is there someone that you're like, no, no, there's more here? Or do they have a problem?
I would say that all three of them have potential. I don't know if it's star power potential, as we've just illustrated, but like Volkanovski and Jan, they're not, I mean, neither of them are doing anything that I think is going to hold them back from moving forward. I mean, like personality wise, marketability wise. I think that if I had to lay odds on the one that's most likely to gain a lot of fans after this fight card, it would be Jan, definitely. Because he got a finish, so there's no weird, like, oh, did he actually win that fight, which I think is hurting Volkanovski quite a bit right now. It was a very exciting fight against Aldo, and so, you know, there's nobody saying that he doesn't deserve to have the title, and he's already got some nice buildup against Aljo. So I think that he's got the best shot there. But to answer your larger question, I don't know. It's hard for me to say because I feel like the marketability of a fighter can turn in an instant. I mean, it can turn in 5 seconds. Jorge Masvidal was not a star. I mean, he had fans and a lot of people loved him, but he was a star after Ben Askren. It doesn't take a lot to grab people's attention. It just needs to be at the right moment. So with the right kind of fight, the right matchup, the right buildup and marketing before a fight, you know, who knows? One of these guys could definitely skyrocket. I think if Usman, you know, went back to his roots a little bit, you know, focus on your story. Like, that's a cool story. Like, be who you are. And like that marriage counseling is like a crazy different, like you could not be more opposite in a career choice, like play into that. I don't know that it will hurt the UFC in the long run, because they always seem to pull off a spin in one way or another. But I do think Dana's a little disappointed that, you know, that one of the big ones didn't pull it off.
You know, it's weird because the funny thing about Usman is that he has to understand that you can advocate for yourself. And now we're getting back on Usman. I won't talk about Jan, but you can advocate for yourself. But there can't be that disconnection of authenticity, meaning this. Right. I think that when people hear Usman say, oh, I'd be a marriage counselor, it's just him furthering his brand, which is problematic right now, of I'm telling you what you should think about me or about anything else. And people, at some level, Kate, you just got to give the people what they want. And say what you want to about Israel Adesanya. Yes, he is very authentic to who he is.
I love that kid.
But who he is what the people want. They want a guy with putting out memes on social media. They want a guy who dances well. They want a guy who understands who he is. And I just think that we'll get to Jan. And the funny thing about Jan is he's about to get what I call, like, you know, the hipster pushback, which is every hipster that loved him for the last year or two is now going to be like, okay, now everybody's listening to the band I discovered. and now I hate them. So I think Jan's going to go through that. There's something about, you know, I'm going to put this to Jan, but I'm going to talk about how Adesanya, Connor, and Masvidal all rose. And a lot of it is things that you can't control. When he fought Darren Till, this is Masvidal, Till was a mess. He was mentally, he didn't know if he wanted to fight. So he knocks him out. Then he pieces up Leon Edwards in the back. He couldn't have planned that. He lucked out that Till was a mess emotionally. Yep. He lucked out that Leon Edwards ran his mouth. So now the star begins to rise, right? Then he lucked out that Askren took him lightly, and he lucked out that Nate Diaz fights once every 3 years. Same thing with Connor. Connor is like, he lucked into Chad Mendes' short notice. He lucked into the fact that Jose Aldo slept on him and he knocked him out in 13 seconds. I mean, Connor's a great fighter, but, you know, the fact that he fought a young Holloway and a young Poirier, like a lot of this is a lot of luck involved. And I think that the one thing that no one talks about with fighters who talk a lot of shit and run their mouth is that what that does to your opponent is they say there's no way he can be as good as he says he is. And they sleep on you a little bit. And by the time everybody figured out how good people still say Connor's not good. And it's like, he's got two belts. He's not Hall of Famer's dead. He doesn't even, no one cares. So my point with Jan is that he has a few things that could fall his way and really help him out. I think that the influx of Dominic Cruz, potentially, the influx of Cody Garbrandt into his life, him and Garbrandt have a little bit of beef. I saw
a couple posts about that.
I think Sterling is the fight, but I don't think Sterling helps him become a star. I think that Sterling reinforces what he already is. He has more than he's fighting Aljamain Sterling than he has to gain. He has a lot to gain fighting Cody Garbrandt, Dominic Cruz.
Right.
So you could make the argument. I think the reason why one thing that I talked with Cameron about is something Chael Sonnen says, which is fights happen for one of two reasons, either the push or the mandate. Promotions either push the fight or fans mandate it. And I think sometimes when you're saying about a fight like Aljamain Sterling, he goes, I'm not sure. It's because he wants fans to demand it. And when they demand it, then he knows they'll buy it. So what do you think is next for these guys? And I want to throw a specific scenario out at you, which is, how do you feel about Aldo and Cruz fighting?
I love that fight. Love that fight.
Because that maybe sets Cruz up to fight Jan if he wins.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I got it. I mean, this show is called Recency Bias, so I've got to throw in my bias. Aljo is my boy. Like, I love that kid. So I want to see him get this fight. And I think he already had earned this fight. Like, I was one of the ones that was like super upset that Jan Aldo was happening in the first place, because I thought it had everything to do with the fact that Segundo called out Aldo and they must've made him a promise somewhere along the line. So, you know, but I won't go into all of that. So I want to see the Aljo fight, happen, and I want to see him win. But if he doesn't, if Jan, you know, if Jan cements his title as the 135 champion, I would absolutely love to see Cruz and Aldo face each other, and then see the winner take him. I would definitely love to see Cody Garbrandt in there as well. I think that he made a pretty big statement in his last fight. He probably still has a couple fights to go before the title talk will happen. But yeah, definitely Cruz Aldo, because those are two very well-known names in the community. I think that there are a lot of people that would get behind both of them. And Aldo looked good. Like, there were quite a few moments in that fight where I was going, maybe I picked the wrong horse. He looked a lot better than I expected him to look. Especially after watching him against Marlon.
He did. And I think that the interesting thing with that was that, you know, it's funny how these things change in a minute, because I tweeted that, you know, we've been writing Jose Aldo's obituary for 3 years. And if he wins last night, he's now a two division champion. So now he puts the distance between himself and Demetrius Johnson, Dominic Cruz. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can make a case he puts the distance between Anderson Silva because he has two belts. And we've been trying to kill this kid for 3 years. So, you know, what's interesting to me.
Oh, Why?
Well, you know, because he's not what he once was. I think that here's the argument against Aljamain Sterling getting the belt. And I don't want to make this argument too strongly because I want him to get the shot.
Sure.
I agree with you that Cody Garbrandt may be a couple of fights away, but here's the problem. In those fights, you may lose the opportunity to cash in on Cody Garbrandt. So here's mm-hmm. here's a scenario for you that is not popular. You'll hate it, but this is a scenario that makes sense. The next fight for Petr Yan is Cody Garbrandt. The next fight for, because he's hot, just so we clarify, as a fighter, I think he's hot. He's you know, I don't want people to think I think Cody Garbrandt's hot. Although neck tattoos, you know, what are you going to do? No, I think that...
But he kind of is.
Yeah, see? If Yan fights Garbrandt and Cruz fights Aldo, you have endless possibilities in matching up the winners. If Garbrandt somehow pulls the win out on Yan, now you can fight Garbrandt and Cruz again. If Aldo mm-hmm. pulls out the victory, now you got Garbrandt and Aldo. So I don't want to talk anyone out of the Aljamain Sterling fight, but you have to have a lot of faith that you could put Cody Garbrandt on ice and people will still be as interested in him fighting Yan 6 months from now after Yan fights Aljo, as they would be if he fought him now, because he's just now coming off of ducking a punch and sleeping a guy. So if the Cody Garbrandt interest will sustain itself for 6 months, but he is like a Fabergé egg right now, and if you put him in there with the wrong guy, he's going to crumble. And I think that if we're going to maximize who Cody Garbrandt is, you got to strike while the iron's hot. And that's not fair to Aljo, and I don't want to take this opportunity away from him. I'm just saying we got a small window with Garbrandt. And a big window.
You are right. I do hate it.
Yeah. We got a big window with Sterling and a small window with Garbrandt. So that's, I'm with you. I think Sterling deserves it. I guess, but I do think,
how long was it since Cody's last fight?
It was a minute.
TJ Dillashaw over a year ago, right?
Yeah, but I think he had some fights in there. Right? He was on a little bit of a skid. So I think that
he was on a losing streak.
Right.
So
he'd
lost two fights in a row.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, I saw a significant, and maybe it's just me, but because I wasn't a huge Cody fan in the beginning, but I kind of warmed up to him.
So listen, when he fought Dominic Cruz, he was undefeated. Sure. Then he lost to Dillashaw twice.
Yeah.
Then he lost to Pedro Munhoz. So he was on a 3-fight losing streak before he, you know, knocked Rafael Sunsau's head from the apex to Fight Island. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so does a guy who's 1-3 in his last four deserve a title shot? No. But if you're ever going to maximize on this kid, now's the time. And that's incredibly unfair to Sterling. I'm just talking as a guy who's trying to maximize the roster.
And that's fair. I will give you this. The thing that I did not like about Cody when he fought Dillashaw both times is that he lets stuff get to him. He gets very emotional and he rushes and he makes mistakes. And what I saw when he fought Sunsau is a lot more careful. Like, I'm going to pick my shots. I'm going to time things. I'm going to set stuff up. Like, I saw that knockout he set that up the whole round. Like, he was doing those weird drop things. And so he drops again. It looks like a level change and he switches it up and comes in with that huge hook. And it's like, I don't know if I agree that he's quite as fragile, because I do see a difference in his performance. Now, that being said, like you said, with the wrong opponents, he loses a lot of steam. But I think that he's got enough of that X factor star power that he could see his way through this for a little while. So,
well, and I think it depends on also how much stock we're going to put in Dillashaw's PED use. I mean, that kid was on the spinach, and who knows what that led to in those two fights.
How long.
So if that made a huge difference, then maybe he's not as washed as you'd like to think he is.
Now, didn't they say they went back and tested him for PEDs? Because I swear I read that Cody called for that.
Yeah.
And wanted to know.
Well, they were ex-teammates, and Cody knew what he was up to. So when they were teammates on Team Alpha Male, Cody was like, listen, man, you're the guy that's teaching people how to use EPO, so I know you're on it. You know, he was like, you were conducting, you know, professional developments on EPO.
They didn't find anything. I mean, and I don't know, maybe there's just no good way to test for that long after the fact, but I thought I read that they didn't actually find that
Are you asking me if he was clean when he fought Garbrandt? Because he was not.
I don't know. I don't know if he was clean. I just thought that I read that Cody said, I want you to retest him for this stuff for when he and I fought, because I know that they like
keep the samples for a certain amount of time.
And I thought that it was negative, but I don't know. I don't know how long that stuff would stay.
Well, according to John Jones, you got picograms in there forever. So who knows? John Jones has, you know, been peeing PEDs for years.
Oh God, if we get started on John Jones, we could be here for a long time.
I think that I like to create things that can be clips. So here's one.
Okay.
I think that we can compare Cody Garbrandt a little bit to Shia LaBeouf. Like Shia LaBeouf was a madman for a lot of years. And then he went away for a little bit, made some, you know, nice, sweet movies, Honey Boy, what have you. And now he seems to be like he's got it leveled out. So I do agree with you that Cody Garbrandt was out of his mind for a lot of years. But if he's if he's kind of reeled that in a little bit, again, you're making the anti Sterling getting this shot argument, or I am. But I want to be very clear. I think Aljamain Sterling deserves this shot. I just think that you have a commodity in Cody Garbrandt, and you need to be very careful with how you
sure.
All right.
Right now, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say right now you're arguing the business aspect, which is a huge aspect. And I think a lot of fans forget about. So I get where you're coming from.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about what we typically talk about, because we got off on a couple of tangents here, which is, the night as overall. Who do you think won the night?
I think Jan won the night on paper, because like I said, he had a very definitive finish. Nobody's going to fault him for what was a horrendous stop, in my opinion. That really, there's no reason to let that go on for 45 seconds. But he had a definitive finish, and he seems like a mostly likable guy. So I do think that there is some marketability there. The fight with Aljo is already pretty much set. So he is set. I know. I'm just saying that based on what's already happened, he did everything that he needed to do. He got what he came for, and he ended the night well. But I suppose the runner up, I would say, was actually Masvidal, because he lost no steam, it seems like. As far as the fans are concerned, I saw so much hate going Usman's way.
Yeah.
Unfairly so. And so many people like really praising Masvidal because he ended the fight respectfully. You know, he congratulated Usman. He said that he did, like, I watched his post-fight press conference. He said he did a lot of things really well, that, you know, he thinks that if he had a full camp that he could do it differently, but he's totally prepared to fight several, like, he's not asking for an immediate rematch, which I think was really, really smart. I think he handled his loss really well. So he's kept and retained all of those fans that were kind of jumping on the bandwagon for the last week. So I would say that he's the runner up for me.
I agree. I mean, he's definitely Jan's, and maybe the Proshkov kid that had the big knockout in the prelims. He's a crazy kid. And I asked Cameron how many guys he can get away with that kind of fighting style at 205. And
almost no one.
Yeah. This is definitely short, but it was fun for tonight.
Yeah.
I think I'm with you. Here's the thing with Masvidal. I don't think he lost a lot in the sense that he's right where he was before the fight. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. If he wins this fight, he fights Connor next. So from that perspective, did lose a lot in the way that when you're in Vegas and you bet $100 and you should have bet $1,000, you lost, right? You won the bet still, but you should have maybe cashed in more. So
correct.
I'm with you. He's the same guy. He took a risk and lost very little in risking it, but he could have gotten a lot more had he won. So the question becomes, and now the other fair question to ask is whether he would have gotten the shot had he waited. And maybe not. Or maybe he fights.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe Masvidal fights Gilbert Burns and it's less of a, you know, Usman was the guy. He had problems with Usman. He you know, so I'm with you. I think that he didn't gain as much as he could have, but didn't really lose anything. This is the question that's always problematic. Yeah. So let's get to it. Who do you think peaked tonight? Who had the best night they're
probably
ever gonna
not
have?
The way that you want me to answer this.
Answer it however you want.
See, and that's not really my answer. See, I know you hate that I skirt around this question.
Right.
We got to talk about Paige, man. I think that she peaked in her last fight is what I want to say. This girl, she's adorable. She's got a lot of fans. She's been a good fighter. She's had some good performances in the past, but you have to look at who the names in these divisions. The women's divisions are getting better. And even if she were to stay up at 125, you've got Chukagian, you've got Barber, you've got Shevchenko. I don't give her one shot against any of them. And if she stays at one, you know, goes back down to 115, you've got Hill, you've got Joanna, you've got Rose, you've got Wei Li. These are all killers in these divisions. And I just don't see Paige going any further. And I feel bad because, you know, she was talking about testing her free agency a few months ago and that she wants to, you know, ride out her contract. She wants to fight it out. And she thought that, you know, she would make a big statement and be able to negotiate for more money. And Dana has basically flat out come out and said, nah, I think you should go. I mean, you should go test it. So I feel for her, but yeah, I don't know that we're going to see Paige again in the UFC.
Well, here's why you're a professional, despite what you may say or think in terms of podcasting, because we wouldn't have got to Paige if not for that answer. Maybe we could have snuck her in and not for nothing. She sure as hell wouldn't have been the moment of the night or tomorrow's headline or who set themselves up. So this is the place to talk about her, and she needs to be talked about. So I appreciate that.
Yes.
So here's where I'm with you.
Oh, no problem.
I'm with you because she is probably never going to be in the UFC again. So she peaked tonight because tonight was her last night in the UFC. And now she may have better nights in terms of her enjoyment of being a fighter, right? Which is to say Benson Henderson and Ryan Bader may like being in Bellator more than they like being in the UFC. So they may have a better life now because they're in Bellator, and so may she may be the same way because her husband's in Bellator. But in terms of negotiating power, in terms of branding and leaving, you know, I think she's reached a point in life. And again, I hate to steal stuff from the other podcast, but it's relevant here, which is to say, someone once said the worst thing you can be is famous and broke, and the worst thing you can be as a fighter is when your name outweighs your game. And right now her name is leaps and bounds beyond her game. And the reason why that's a bad place to be is because all promoters are going to put you in there with killers because they're like, I have a girl that has real potential and I want her to knock Paige Van Zandt's head off. So everybody knows who she is. And that's where Paige is. Now, in terms of who peaked tonight, I'm going to go a little bit more of a curveball, but stay with the same gender. Rose Namajunas. I question Rose Namajunas's love for this game. Now, there's a larger question that can be had. I also asked Cameron, which is, does Pat Barry live vicariously through Rose Namajunas? Maybe. Because she has the career that he never did. And he seems to love the sport more. If Rose Namajunas stopped fighting, she would not coach. Pat Barry coaches. Now, does he coach because he's Rose Namajunas' fiance? I don't know. And I don't want to go too far down the Pat Barry Rose Namajunas street because there's a lot of iffy stuff down that street. But my point is that she's avenged one of her losses. She's already been champion. Mm-hmm. I don't think she has anything for Zhang mm-hmm. Weili. So I think mm-hmm. this might have been it for her in terms of, like, is this a bigger night than – there's two ways to answer this question. You can either say this person peaked because this is the biggest night they're ever going to have in a cage, or mm-hmm. this is the last big night they're going to have in a cage. I think for Rose Namajunas, this is the last big night she's going to have in a cage. I don't see her heart being in it. I looked at her face at the end of that fight, and I'm like, she won this. Who the hell wants to go through this again? I don't think it's her.
Right.
There are people that look at their face like looking like that, smile, post a mm-hmm. shot on Instagram, and get back in the gym the next day. I don't think that's her.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts on Namajunas?
I mean, and I spoke about this when I was making my picks on my Instagram. It felt like when she fought Andrade the first time that her heart wasn't totally in it. Like, you could already kind of get the sense that her losing her belt was a little bit of a relief. So I was actually pretty surprised that she came back. Now, I still had her picked because I think she is the better fighter, but I do have to agree with you to a point that I don't know if this is really what she wants to do, which is probably hard for her fiance to let go of, because she is so talented. Her boxing is so technical. She is so fluid and so smooth, and her footwork is beautiful. Like, she's got a lot of stuff going for her, but there is one thing that you cannot train a fighter to do, and that is have the heart to do this. Like, you either have that or you don't. And if she's not 100% in this, I would rather see her go than watch her, you know, hit every branch on the way down. I do agree with you that Weili is just, that girl is a monster. Like, her fight with Joanna, I'm still reeling about that fight. And she took Andrade out in 42 seconds. Like, I as good as I think Rose is, I still would put all my money on Weili in that fight. And I thought that after beating Andrade that Rose potentially set herself up for another title run. But yeah, you do make a very good point that I'm not so sure that she's 100% in it right now.
Yeah, and you know, someone once said a long time ago, I think it was about boxing, but fighting in general, is that the only thing that a fighter owes the fans is the willingness to fight. You don't owe a certain mm-hmm. number of leg kicks. You don't have to fight the way they want you to fight. You know, Kamaru will yep. come out and throw hands. It's his business. Doesn't matter how good a wrestler he is. Johnny Hendricks did that.
Yep.
So all you owe the fans is the willingness to be in there. And I'm starting to see that a little bit waning in her. And, mm-hmm. you know, Zhang Weili is no fun. You know, the joke that some people say is, you know, it's like you get congratulated on you. It's like you win a prize to then go before a firing squad. It's like, hey, congratulations, mm-hmm. you won. What I win? Oh, you're going to go against Zhang Weili. That's not much of a yeah. prize. So,
no.
So,
and Zhang Weili is one of those fighters who wins the belt and is in the gym the very next day.
Yes.
I'm almost certain I saw her post drills the day after she won.
And she's
girl.
Yeah. Ugh. And she's built, I think, for a long run. It seems like it. She's built mm-hmm. for it. She wants it.
Yep.
You kind of mentioned this, and I agree with you, despite the mental issues. And we'll transition to the next question, which is, who set themselves up best for their next fight? You know, you can make an argument, Masvidal. You can make an argument, obviously, Kamaru Usman's destiny's already made. Volkanovski, there's not, you know, and here's an interesting question I missed out on asking earlier, so now's a good time to bring it up.
Okay.
Based on what's happening at 45 and 35, obviously 35 has a lot more studs than 45, but 45 does have some studs in it, but their names mm-hmm. are not quite there yet. Do you think Volkanovski and Petr Yan are in each other's futures? And the reason why I ask that is because when Petr Yan fought Jose Aldo, he seemed big.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger than Aldo. And yet Aldo was the champion, a weight class up, for a decade. And Volkanovski's a small featherweight. So height-wise, do you think that they're the answer to each other's problems, or do you think the divisions have enough there? I mean, we talked about what Petr Yan's options are forever. Obviously, Calvin Kattar's fighting Wednesday against eBay, so that opens up featherweight. Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know. What do you think? And I'm transitioning this because I'm assuming that you're saying Rose set herself up best for her next fight. So what do you think about Yan and Volkanovski?
No, I actually had Yan for this answer as well, but just because I thought he put on a good performance, and I think that 135 division is looking sharp, like you said. As far as Yan facing Volkanovski, I don't think I would rule it out, but I'm going to go ahead and say something that a lot of people probably won't find very popular. I hate the champ business. Hate it. Hate it. I want it gone. I want it to die so bad. I cannot.
It ties up divisions. It does.
It was fun for a minute. It was fun and exciting for a minute. And that minute was when there weren't as many people. Like, there weren't as many top tier contenders. To do champ right now blows my mind. Like, what on earth are you doing? It, like, for when, before Henry Cejudo retired, he was already talking about going up to 145. And I'm like, you son of a bitch. You little garden gnome, don't you dare. Like, don't you dare tie up one more division. I can't stand it. So I won't rule that fight out, but I really don't want to see it when both of them have the belts. I don't.
And I think also we talked a lot about a lot of options for Yan, and literally everyone that we talked about is more famous than he is. So they do bring him up a level, you know. Even Sterling probably has more notoriety in the States than Yan does. Now Yan's a champ, so stuff's going to come with that, but Cruz does, Garbrandt does. If Dillashaw comes back 135, he does. So he has options in a way that Volkanovski needs, like, a year or so for the division to catch up with him, I think.
But you've got Brian Ortega, you've got the Korean Zombie.
That gets interesting. If those two guys fight and the winner of them fights Volkanovski, that, I think Ortega,
power. I like that. I like that migration. Yeah. I've been wanting to see those two fight for a while now. I hate that it still hasn't happened. I saw Korean Zombie is already calling out Volkanovski, saying that the decision was terrible. He didn't win the fight, and that if we set him up against Volkanovski, he won't let it go to the judges, and yada yada yada. But I do want to see him fight Ortega first. But I love that setup. And I think that 45, if we give it another 6 months, there's going to be at least three guys that are going to be in that conversation.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so tomorrow's headline, I got one for you, and it's not fully formed, but there's enough here.
Because mine's terrible.
There's enough here that I think that we can work with it. All right? So I'm going to give you the initial headline, and then maybe we'll mold it into something.
Okay.
Because Petr Yan was the person that we believe is the star of the night, and because Kamaru Usman is so boring, how about Yan Fest? Like, we're playing on Yan in both ways. So I think it's kind of there.
Yep. Full stop. I like that, because I had a Kamaru Snoozman thing going on here.
I think if you put like a split screen of the two of them and just put Yan Fest at the top, or a real yawner. Something like that.
I think that's excellent. That is the pun I was looking for. Yep, we're not even gonna do mine.
All right,
that one's the winner.
What was the moment of the night? It's got to be this madman on the prelims running around with Ozdemir,
that's like, the one
looking
I had.
Away and
that fight. Oh my god. Okay, so here's something that most people probably don't know about me, unless you pay real close attention to my Instagram. I'm actually Greek Orthodox. Not Greek, but I go to a Greek Orthodox church. So when I watch fights with my dad, and they're very international fights, he's always paying attention to the guys who cross themselves the orthodox way. Both Jan and I can't say this guy's name right. Can you say this guy's name right? Yuri?
Yuri Prokhorov, I think. No, Prochka.
Okay.
No, it's a mess.
Prochka?
I think so. Let's go with that.
Czech is difficult.
I had it and I lost it. It's one of those things like, yeah, it took me forever. My son actually figured out how to say Nurmagomedov before I did, but he's a lot smarter than
I am. Yeah, that's the reason that I still just call him Habib. Everybody Prochka. Knows what that name is. Yeah. Prochka. Okay.
Yuri Prochka.
So Yuri. Yuri steps in the cage and he does the sign of the cross, and my dad's like, hey, he's Orthodox. And I was like, well, great. I didn't have anybody picked for this fight officially, so we'll root for him. And he starts going, and I'm going, oh boy. oh boy, how is this one gonna go? And my dad's like, I've never seen anybody throw their hands out like that. And I said, I've seen a couple guys do something to that effect, but never, those were some antics. And then to see him get a knockout off of that, I was dying. Oh, that was fun.
Okay, so I'm gonna give you a line for your dad. Okay, it's a little bit of a dad joke and a little corny, but it's not too bad. So you pocket this because
I love dad jokes.
I'm guessing your dad's not gonna listen to this podcast. If he does, then it's ruined that I handed you this line.
He probably will.
The next time Prochka fights, I want you to tell your dad, you know, for an Orthodox guy, he sure does fight unorthodox. I mean, could there be a bigger dad joke than that? So there you go. That's the line to hit your dad with. He'll appreciate it.
That's a great dad joke. I'm gonna go tell him right away.
He's the most, unorthodox, orthodox guy I've ever seen. Something like that.
Yeah, he was so unorthodox. I did not even know what I was watching for the first few minutes of that fight. I had no idea. And he took some heavy shots. Dude has a chin.
Yeah.
I thought, no joke, man.
Yeah, I'm like, he's playing with the wrong guy in here because Ozdemir will take you out. But
exactly.
He knows himself. All right. I don't really have nothing, but not for nothing. I think I was probably going to blast Paige in this area, so we'll save that because, you know, she's I like her. I do. I think that she
Wait, I didn't hear what you said. What'd you say? Not for nothing. What?
I didn't have any really, and I was going to blast Paige in this.
Oh, I have one.
What do you got?
Not for nothing, but we have got to figure out MMA scoring. We have got to figure something out that's better than the system that we're in. I have an idea that I'm going to try to flush out in my video this week.
Okay.
But the short of it, I haven't figured out the math yet exactly, but the long and short of it is weighted rounds, that the ending rounds should be more important than the beginning rounds. And the reason that I feel that way is because we set up MMA to kind of be this experiment as to what would happen if people who were at the highest level, you know, got into a scrap, who would win?
Right.
So it's the closest to mimicking a real world fight as we can get. Because boxing is, that's not a real world fight. No, you've never seen a bar fight that looks like a boxing match. Seen a bar fight.
The best line ever is with Joe Rogan when he said, boxing is one of those things where it's like you see a guy in a bar and you say, okay, hey, man, I want to fight, but we can only use our hands. It's like a weird agreement.
Right. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one does that.
Right.
So they set MMA up to mimic real world as closely as possible. Of course, there are still a lot of rules involved, you know, no groin strikes, no eye pokes, no ear biting, etc. So the way that I've started seeing it, and this is the way that I saw the Volkanovski fight go, is that I don't think they wanted to give Max those first three rounds, because then it would mean the fight was decided. Unless Volkanovski has a finish, you've basically decided, yep, Max won this fight if you give him the first three rounds. And I think that kind of hurts it a little bit, because the end of the fight in the real world is what matters. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. So shouldn't it be the person that is not just surviving that last round or those last two rounds? Shouldn't it be the person that's still fighting? I don't know. Like I said, I haven't totally fleshed it out yet. But we've got to figure out something.
It's certainly a hot take. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, right.
What's your hot take?
There you go. There's your sound clip.
I'm with you. But
we got to do something though. Maybe it's not that, but we have to do something because I'm getting so tired of people blaming the judges. Ben Askren said it. It's not the judges. It's the system. It's a bad system.
Well, I will say this: form open of fighting. Scoring addresses some of those things. And imagine if the crowd was aware after the third round.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're in a world where the scores get flashed up, and when the scores are flashed up, the judges get booed. They're going to be a little more cognizant and aware of how they're going to. So that might be the answer. But I don't hate what you're saying. There's just a way to do it. Because like you said, when I was talking to Cameron, I think that we do this 10-point must system. But like in boxing, if you get sat on your ass, it's going to be a 10-8 round. And the other guy doesn't. If you get dropped
it's
in boxing,
automatically a 10-8 round. Right.
So Max dropped Volkanovski in the first two rounds, and they were not 10-8 rounds.
Right.
So now I do understand in boxing it's different because if you get dropped in boxing, it's an eight count. If you get dropped in MMA, you get up. So the argument would be, real quick, the argument would be, is a knockdown in MMA different than a takedown in MMA? If you're getting put on your ass, should they be viewed the same if you get right back up? Like if you get knocked down and get right back up? So my point, Kate, is somebody takes you down in five. So if we're deciding they're the same.
Uh-huh.
If I knock a guy down and it becomes a 10-8 round, and you say, well, that's kind of equatable that you're taking the guy down. What if he takes me down five times? Mm-hmm. Is it a 10-5 round? So that's where it gets funky. Do you know what I'm saying? Like you can't necessarily draw a straight line between what you want to do and what makes logistical sense.
To that point, like you said, when you knock somebody down in boxing, it automatically goes to a 10-8 round because it is such a big, big deal to have that happen. I would not be one of the ones to equate a knockdown to a takedown because I think that they're very different strategically. I think they're very different in their setups. And I also do think that you see a lot more takedowns than you do see knockdowns. I think that the biggest problem that we're having is that is that the rounds should be scored on the whole. And when you start getting into this, well, does it take this or does a knockdown equal this or what about if they're fighting in the clinch and all the guy's doing is stomping on the other guy's foot? How do you score that? We don't know. I mean, there's way too many nuances for you to take every single individual piece and assign it value because depending on the two fighters, Kamaru Usman's takedowns look very different than, say, Khabib Nurmagomedov. Oh my God! See, I can't even say it. Nurmagomedov. Jeez, that is a rough last name.
Is we talk about logistics. If in boxing, if you and listen, just so boxing heads that might listen to this are clear, obviously, if someone gets knocked down, it's not automatic. It's if all things are equal and I knock the other guy down, it's probably a 10-8 round. So my point is that in boxing, you can have a 10-7 round or, you know, they're rare, but you can have them because you have 12 rounds to make it up. In MMA, you can't have a 10-7 round. You only have – the math doesn't work. So there's other logistical reasons why you can't exactly adopt the way boxing does things. But the fact that there's a 10-point must system doesn't make sense anyway if the math doesn't work out. So basically, judges have to judge – based on not putting a fighter in such a hole that he can never recover. In a three-round fight, if the first round's 10-8, the guy has to win the other two rounds just for a draw. So the math makes it difficult. So I get it.
Right, but exactly.
I think there's a different system that can be used.
There's definitely something that has to be done. Ben Askren made on one of his lives this morning, made the suggestion that they should do it like, oh God, is it 1FC that does it? Whole fight scoring.
Pride used to.
Who does it that way? Pride. Well, okay. Yeah. Pride. Yeah. I think he mentioned 1FC, but I don't know if I'm remembering correctly, but his point was that you should be looking at the fight on the whole and saying, okay, who won that exchange? Now, I still think there's something to be said for being the guy who's on top at the end, but I know that there's a lot of people that will disagree with that because they would, that, because that would then mean that guess what? Rose did not win her fight.
Right. That's true.
Andrade finished that fight really well and had one more judge given her that first round, which I didn't agree with the first judge giving her the first round, but had they given her that first round, which was closer, she would have won that fight.
Well, I think that we've had MMA around long enough now, or it's been in existence long enough now that we can revisit scoring in a real way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people mm-hmm. have retired. A lot of people are no longer connected with the sport in the same way. I think if you get, you know, George St. Pierre, John McCarthy, a certain number of guys, Carlos Condit, guys that I think are real minds of the game, you know, Dominic Cruz, DC, get those five guys in a room, you're going to figure this out. Now they're going to argue, but
I agree.
Point is that at this point, I think that it's time for some real change in this way.
Absolutely.
And I think that there are guys that know more about the sport than we do that have the solution. And I think it's time to figure it out. All right. Absolutely. So have we said everything that needs to be said on this card? Is there anything left to say?
Oh, foot stomps are underrated.
Stomps are underrated. Right? You know, somewhere Marco Huon's UFC 7. Is smiling. You know, it's funny. No one has ever tapped from that, obviously. No one ever complains about it. It's got to be the most uncomfortable.
It has to be so annoying. But do those count as, because
you're asking if they count as strikes, they do.
Okay, so is that why his numbers were so
263,
high?
263, yes.
I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What are they counting? And then my dad says to me, he goes, did they count all those foot stomps? And I'm like, holy shit, they might have.
Yeah. Trust me, my 7-year-old son stepping on my foot's no fun. I doubt Kamaru Usman blasting me with his heel is.
No.
I'm sure adrenaline's running through your body and it's the last thing you care about with all the things you have to worry about with Kamaru Usman.
It has to be annoying.
It has to be effective. All right, guys, there you have another episode of Recency Bias is in the books. We can be watched on YouTube, listened to on Spotify and iTunes. Follow Kate at Sophisticated with a K underscore MMA if you want good content or if you want to get your Android on. Kate's the girl. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. As always, these takes are only good for the next week. See you next week, guys. Peace.